ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारा रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 14 टेक्स्ट 7। क्वचित् चाशेष दोष निषदनम पुरीष विशेषम तद्वर्ण गुण निर्मित मति स्वर्णम उपादित सत्य अग्नि काम कातर इवोल्मुक पिशाचम। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिविदान्त स्वामी प्रभुपाद। समटाइम्स द लिविंग एंटिटी इज इंटरेस्टेड इन द येलो स्टूल नोन एज गोल्ड एंड रन्स आफ्टर इट। That gold is a source of material opulence and envy, and it can enable one to afford illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication. Those whose minds are overcome by the mode of passion are attracted by the color of gold, just as a man suffering from cold in the forest runs after a phosphorescent light in a marshy land, considering it to be fire. Purport. Parikshit Maharaj told Kali Yuga to leave his kingdom immediately and reside in four places: brothels, liquor shops, slaughterhouses, and gambling casinos. However, Kali Yuga requested him to give him only one place where these four places are included, and Parikshit Maharaj gave him the place where gold is stored. Gold encompasses the four principles of sin, and therefore, according to spiritual life, gold should be avoided as far as possible. If there is gold, there is certainly illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Because people in the Western world have a great deal of gold, they are victims of these four sins. The color of gold is very glittering, and a materialistic person becomes very much attracted by its yellow color. However, this gold is actually a type of stool. A person with a bad liver generally passes yellow stool. The color of the stool attracts a materialistic person, just as the will-o'-the-wisp attracts one who needs heat. I'd like to seek the blessings of Yadubar Prabhu and Shinaji Prabhu for taking this position here, and also beg forgiveness from all of you for the disappointment caused when you all come here to hear Maharaj and you find me sitting here. In fact, I had volunteered to exchange the place with one very senior devotee, and he seemed to say that even if my luck is bad, it is not that bad that I could take this risk. So anyway, Govind Prabhu has some plan in putting me here. I hope he is satisfied at least. So again, my profuse apologies for disappointing you. But just like there is fasting before feasting, we look forward for a very long and engrossing talk by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj on the life and pastimes of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, and that will start from 1 o'clock. So here in this verse, Parikshit Maharaj has requested that all the explanations which Shukadeva Goswami gave him by way of examples, especially the world, this material world compared to a forest. And Parikshit Maharaj said, "I didn't understand. Please explain more clearly." So here, today he is saying that sometimes kvachit cha ashesha dosha nishadanam, that the living entity is interested in the yellow stool known as gold and runs after it. it has unlimited faults. Ashesha dosha nishadanam, purisha vishesham. It just resembles a particular type of stool. Prabhupada says here that gold is a source of material opulence and envy, and it can enable one to afford illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication. And those whose minds are overcome by the mode of passion are attracted by the color of gold, just as a man suffering from cold in the forest runs after phosphorescent. I just checked up in the dictionary that marshy land, which is like semi-solid land, you can't really run or walk over it. But a particular type of gas combustion takes place. Some particular kinds of gas they burn. And then from a distance, you feel as if there is a warm glow. There is a soft fire, like a campfire lit. And what happens when someone runs towards it? You get caught up in that swampy or marshy land and you die. So today also is Vishwarup Mahotsav, the day commemorating the disappearance of Vishwarup, Lord Chaitanya's elder brother, and also the day on which Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. So I'll briefly try to touch on all these three topics. So the subject matter of gold is a very interesting one. There are so many things which are related to gold. In fact, human society has fallen in love so much with this metal that anything nice, anything desirable, we call it, we give it adjective golden. Someone with a nice broad heart is called a person with a golden heart. Someone tries to balance his life. Actually, in material life, balancing means balancing different varieties of sense gratification. And they call it the golden mean, that oh, this person actually knows how to live. So golden hue, golden heart, golden line, golden life, golden mean. In so many ways, gold has acquired so much importance. In fact, some countries, their currency is named after gold. The Netherlands, they have the guilder that has its root from gold. So gold is itself currency. Gold itself is a medium of exchange. And somebody might question as to what's so special. Gold is just like any other metal. Iron is metal, silver is metal, bronze, copper. But then why gold? Because it is special. It has its power given by Krishna. Krishna explains in two chapters of the Bhagavad Gita as to how we can see him even in this material world. Krishna says, of the fish, I am shark. Now, just because of the fish, Krishna is a shark, doesn't make the shark any transcendental. Or of all the animals, he's a lion. That doesn't make devotees embrace lions because, oh, here is Krishna. No, that's not the meaning. The meaning is, if there is any special characteristic, that also Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita verse, yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam. Vibhuti means a special cutting edge characteristic, something extra, something special. Sattvam shrimad urjitam evava. Shrimad urjitam. It's an opulence which especially denotes Krishna's energy. And Krishna says, tattadevavagacchatvam mama tejo amsha sambhava. You should just understand that anything you find special in this world is just a spark of my splendor. It's not the fire. It's not the blazing fire. It's just a small spark. Throughout history, we find man mad after gold. In our early years, we know the story of the Greek king Midas. He was so mad after gold that he wished a boon that whatever it touches should become gold. And by his luck, good luck or ill luck, whatever, he got this boon. So he went to the garden, he touched the railings and that became gold. Then he touched the tree, it became gold. Then he touched the pond and it became shimmering gold. Then he came inside, touched the table, touched his wall, everything became gold. So from morning till afternoon, he was just touching everything and making it into gold. And then he said, okay, now it's enough. I've known I'm the richest man in the world. Let me eat something. So he took an apple and that became gold. And he said, I can't eat this. And he was suffering. The very thing which caused him so much happiness has now become the cause of his suffering. And then when his daughter came and he embraced her, and when she became turned into a statue of gold, he outright started crying. He says, enough, I don't want this boon at all. So just in a matter of few hours, something which was causing him so much joy became the cause of his suffering. Then in history we find how the Spanish colonialists, those who were sent by the soldiers of the King of Spain, when they went to South America, at that time there were inhabitants like the Incas and the Aztecs who were staying there. And they had gold reserves, they had temples topped with gold. And these people thought, look at these people, they are just living like tribal aborigines, they have no culture. And we are from the world which has knowledge, which has culture. And what did they do with that knowledge? They made them poor, they deprived them of everything. And finally, when the local people, they rose in uprising, they decided to, enough is enough. It is described that they were so much angry that these people could do all this to us, torture us, kill us, just for the sake of this gold, that they caught these rulers and they had molten gold fed to them. He says, drink this, if you like this so much, see if you feel happy. And of course, that Spanish gold which was brought from South America on the way to Spain was intercepted on the way by British people. The British called these people merchant adventurers, but the world calls them pirates. And all that gold became, along with the Indian money which came from India, that was a foundation for the Bank of England. The British people are very expert at having something. If it is something, it is nice, then I have to have it. Actually, banks which had gold, they originated in Italy. The word bank comes from the Italian word banco, means a bench. A simple bench where a moneylender would sit. So England also wanted a bank. But they had a bank, but no gold. So they had to fill it up. So they brought this Spanish gold, this Indian gold, started the Bank of England. So in this way it is said that India was the main financier for the Industrial Revolution, because from the Bank of England all the credits and everything went. So just see, we feel that India has no place, no say in the world today. But even the so-called problems of this world caused by the Industrial Revolution were financed with money coming from India. Indirectly, of course, we are not directly responsible. And then in the Americas, the new world which was so-called discovered was the California gold rush. One poor farmer, he was just washing his cattle in a stream and he found something and he showed it to someone and they said, "Wow, it's gold." And before anyone knew, there was a rash of small towns and roads hastily made. And it's the subject of so many novels and films. And it's an analysis done that people made more money selling pickaxes and other equipment than those who actually made money by having that gold. So it's true in this world, if you want to become a millionaire, it's easy to write a book, How to Become a Millionaire, and become a millionaire than by actually trying to work hard and getting a million. Of course, those who write these books are never millionaires. That's a different story. So always throughout the various main chunks of human history, you'll find that there is something which has money or gold as the main cause of strife or war or dissension. In the Bhagavatam we find gold is not made by some chemical reaction. There are various ways in which gold comes. In fact, in the Mohini Murti Mohini Upakhyan, it is said that gold is a semen of Lord Shiva. So it has its divine origin. There are also various other ways in which gold comes. So where has all that gold gone? If India had so much gold, where did it go? Last year we had visited Hampi, and even this month's Back to Godhead magazine has a feature article on Hampi. And those who may read it may find there is a marketplace shown. Now, of course, there are dogs and bats in those shops. But in those times, they were all gold sellers sitting there, exchanging gold, silver, precious stones. In fact, it is said that when the Mughals raided Hampi, through some of the 5 lesser known temples, they collected 150,000 kilograms of gold. And that was just in the periphery temples. They had not yet touched the king's treasury. And so India had so much. Where did it all go? At least in the olden days, we had people showing their gold ornaments. And now we can't even show that. You may buy your gold, but you have a risk of losing a limb just because you want to flaunt your golden ornaments. So life has become so risky in that sense. And therefore Prabhupada cautions here that just like Parikshit Maharaj, when he accosted Kali, Kali had taken the garb, the clothes of a ruler, and he was beating a cow. And Parikshit Maharaj said, "Stop! In my kingdom, I won't allow you to do this." So he said, "What can I do? My age is about to come." He said, "Go to these places where you may find brothels, liquor shops, slaughterhouses or gambling casinos." And Kali said, "There are none. In your kingdom, I don't find any single place where these activities are conducted in a sinful way." Of course, Jiva Goswami, he says that connection with women, intoxicating drinks, the desire to eat meat, all these 3 things, the propensity is always there in a seed-like form, but it is sublimated, it is purified, it is sanctified by various Vedic processes. Vivaha Samskar, the sacred institution of marriage, that provides civilized people to get over the habit of illicit sex. Or after a proper Vedic sacrifice, the people who have offered in sacrifice can partake of somaras and meet those who are really, really habituated to eating meat. They can indulge in it by offering it in sacrifice to Mother Kali. So when Parikshit Maharaj was told by Kali, the personification of this age, that there are no such places available, so then Kali requested, give me a place where gold is hoarded, where someone is storing gold. And he knew that in Kali Yuga, people won't be having that brain substance to manage things properly. And especially when there is money which is ill-gotten, there is every chance that all these things, Prabhupada says here, gold encompasses the four principles of sin. And therefore, according to spiritual life, gold should be avoided as far as possible. If there is gold, there is certainly illicit sex, meat eating, gambling and intoxication. We find that in the Western world, practically the economies are built upon these four activities. In the United Kingdom, hospitals and bridges are made out of money which comes from lottery. So the lottery fund becomes a main source of money for charitable activities. That means the government really doesn't have any money by which it can conduct the basic activities for which the government is instituted in the first place. And then Prabhupada points out, this is the failure of modern government. Any government which promotes these four activities just doesn't have the right to exist. But then, who's going to stop it? Governments are made, ruling parties are unseated or they are put in power based on money which comes from gold. Prabhupada says here, because people in the Western countries, in the Western world, have a great deal of gold, they are victims of these four sins. Of course, how do devotees relate to that? Prabhupada is saying here, gold should be avoided. Well, at least gold should be avoided in our on our altar, or when we dress, when we have the deities with their ornaments. Just like last week, we got the news that in Hyderabad, some thieves broke open the back door of the temple and they carried away deity ornaments and a Narasimha deity and Prabhupada's small deity just because they think it is made from gold. So unnecessarily, they are not made of gold, the ornaments are not made of gold. But in today's times, just because people are attracted, they might stoop down to any kind of activity. And then the devotees feel so bad, especially you feel as if there are some offenses committed in regards to the worship or whether the deities are angry or what exactly. So Prabhupada was very clear, he says, don't do that, don't entice anyone. So how do devotees avoid gold, or should we also think in the same way as a materialistic person is described here? A devotee's desire is to use everything in Krishna's service. That's the primary thing. And therefore, anything, Prabhupada clarifies in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, just like Arjuna as a warrior was encouraged to use his skill as an archer, all resources can be used in Krishna's service. Gold has another deeper meaning for devotees. It is said that, not it is said, it is a fact. Radharani's complexion is the complexion of molten gold. She is called Gaurangi. Gaura means gold, golden. And Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, who is Shyam, who is dark. His bodily color is like a dark rain cloud. But he accepts the complexion of Radharani because her heart is the storehouse of a sentiment which is so high, it is called Mahabhav. I don't think I am fit enough to even discuss that, but just to give an idea, Radharani is the topmost worshipper of Krishna and her heart is the storehouse of this Mahabhav. So in one sense, she is the only one with a golden heart. People sing songs that this keeps me searching for a heart of gold. So we cannot find a heart of gold in this material world. There is nobody with that heart. There is only one personality with a real heart of gold, and that is Srimati Radharani. So Krishna, he stole that feeling, he stole those emotions. So Krishna, when he dons the complexion of Radharani, he comes as Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared as the son of Jagannath Mishra and Shachi Devi. He had an elder brother, Vishwaroop. And as Lord Chaitanya was called Nimai, as Nimai was naughty in his childhood, to that extent Vishwaroop was very grave, very sober. We heard yesterday how Haridas Thakur, Advaita Acharya and all the other senior Vaishnavas would gather in Shantipur and would discuss Krishna Katha. Because they would think, they would see the gross materialism which was spread all over Navadvip. People are not interested in understanding Krishna. In fact, those who were trying their bit to understand the Bhagavat, or those who would sit through a Bhagavat recitation, or those who would speak Bhagavat, they would speak in such a way that there would be no mention of Krishna or devotional service. They would be interested in worshipping demigods. There is a nice book of Prabhupada's essays, Renunciation Through Wisdom. It was originally Bengali called Vairagya Vidya. And Prabhupada brings up this point here, that many people feel that if Krishna is so opulent, Krishna is the richest personality, so we may also need a lot of money to worship Krishna. Or in today's context, do we need a lot of gold to worship Krishna? And Prabhupada says, no. Krishna offers patram pushpam phalam toyam. Give me a leaf, flower, fruit, or some water. If not all, even one will do. But unfortunately, people, as in Lord Chaitanya's times, as they are today, are so much attracted towards worshipping demigods, because they feel that if I worship this personality, he will quickly fulfill my desires. Prabhupada is very heavy when he analyzes this. He says, this is just an excuse by tamoguni people for what Prabhupada calls base enjoyment and fiendish revelry. He just calls this is just excuse demigod worship on such a big scale. We are just recovering from that today. I think most of you must have had a sleepless night yesterday. We have nothing against a particular demigod, but we have so much against the process. Someone was telling me that one social reformer, who is also called a Mahatma, he was also a civil contractor. He had that business. And today's building, Bombay Municipal Corporation, he was instrumental in constructing that to some extent. And it was there that the first Sarvajanik Demigod Utsav was performed, or it was mooted that this should be done. And at that time, when it was just about to begin, if we know this big procession and this big utsav which takes place in Bombay doesn't have any root in spirituality. The British government had forbidden Indians, especially in Bombay, to congregate together. You cannot come for any public occasion, no social function. So this particular leader said, what if we have this Sarvajanik Utsav? And the government said, okay, if you want to come for a puja, that's no problem. So on the pretext of a puja, there would be political rallies and political meetings and so many different things. So that time one person had observed that very soon this might degenerate into a gambling den or just a collective of unsocial elements, antisocial elements coming together. Now this was predicted 125 years ago maybe. And today what do we see? Still more. Prabhupada says, in this kind of pompous demigod worship, what are the main defects? There are no ethics. No arrangements for public feasting. There is no arrangement for profuse distribution of prasad, Krishna prasad. No authorized mantras chanted and no proper offerings done. So how can you even know whether this particular demigod is pleased or not? How do we know even he is there? When you say deity worship, the deity is there accepting the offering. Prabhupada says it is just an excuse for wild singing, dancing and misbehaving. Now, Prabhupada wrote this essay in the 1950s. So just an excuse for wild singing, dancing and misbehaving. So if Krishna's worship requires just a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, and Prabhupada says there is no person in the world who can say that he has no access to these four things, or at least one of them. But Lord Chaitanya's worship doesn't even require that. You can worship Lord Chaitanya simply by chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. This is how we worship the Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya in his five features. And by that purification, we are qualified to chant the Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in this small group of Vaishnavas who were discussing Krishna Katha and lamenting, the Bengalis at that time would have the deities, the goddesses of Chandi, Bashuli, Shitala, they would worship all these demigoddesses. If not, they would have weddings, marriage ceremonies of their cats and dogs. It was all completely wild. And in that atmosphere, these Vaishnavas would simply lament. They would wait for the opportune time when Krishna would come. They had this feeling that something is going to happen, but then who's going to do that? So in such an assembly, Vishwarup would be very much intent in discussing Krishna Katha. And when Nimai was born, they felt that auspiciousness spread all over. And as Nimai began to grow, after some time, Shachimata, she would send Nimai to this place of Adhivacharya and say, call your brother for lunch. So this group would see this young Nimai, small boy, and they would feel great peace looking at him. Some unknown assurance in the heart. And young Nimai would catch the cloth of his older brother and say, please come, mother is calling for lunch. But very soon, Vishwarup, having known what this world is, just decided to give it up. Nobody knows how he took the decision, how he left. Seeing that Jagannath Mishra was he was completely devastated. In fact, he never recovered after his son left. And before leaving his body, he requested his wife, "Please stipulate that I have lost one son, I should not lose another." In fact, just before that, he had another dream where he saw Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi. So later, when Nimai became a very arrogant scholar, he became arrogant to such an extent, it was like the sum total of all arrogance in the world. Nobody could match his arrogance even. And as much he was arrogant, he became humble when he accepted Ishwar Puri as his guru. And later, when he decided to take sannyas, a sannyasi cannot stay in his place. People will accuse him. At least in those days, in India, the main accusation would be that a sannyasi is attached to his hearth, home, his wife, or eating nice, palatable foodstuff. Naturally, if you are a sannyasi and if you take sannyas in your own village, people will feed you nicely. They will see to it that you are taken care of. So, but he wanted an excuse. So one day he said, "I desire to find the whereabouts of my dear brother." And of course, nobody can stop him. So on that pretext, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he left his homeland. And after wandering all over India, finally at Pandharpur, he found that he had taken sannyas, his older brother had taken sannyas, and had accepted the name of Shankararanya Swami. And he had left his body and he had taken samadhi there. Since today is also the day on which Srila Prabhupada accepted sannyas, I would like to discuss a little of those pastimes. When Srila Prabhupada had left his home, the Lilamar describes very graphically how one day he told his people, "I am leaving." And no one took notice. Because that was not the first time he had said, "I am leaving." A dozen times he had said, "I am leaving." And they never knew where he went. And just as he had left, one day he would just arrive. He would go to his study, start writing, do something. But at that particular day, he was determined. Because when he had come with some plans. Prabhupada explained to his disciples that he had a factory in Allahabad, very nicely running business. He was hoping to combine his business profits with his preaching strategies. He said, "If I get money, I put my money here and it's glorious." But somehow in Jhansi, he found a nice house. He even had the walls painted with the words "League of Devotees." And he had a growing congregation. He had a tough time managing this triangle, Allahabad, Jhansi and Calcutta. Because there was no one running his business properly. His household life was slowly crumbling. And he was devoting more and more time and attention to this growing preaching program in Jhansi. But it ran into serious difficulties. The main difficulty was, the person who gave that place, his wife, in fact, I don't know how there is an uncanny connection between those pastimes. It was K.M. Munshi, Kanayalal Munshi, who was at that time the governor of Uttar Pradesh. And his wife was interested in getting that property for a ladies' club, for some social gatherings and rummy evenings and you don't know what. So Prabhupada tried to stamp on their minds that this is a much, much more important thing what I am doing. I am spreading Bhagavad Dharma. It's the need of the hour. Prabhupada said, "I am crying alone in the wilderness. Please help, someone help. Not that I need help. But you need to take my help." But of course, no one came forward. And when Prabhupada came to know that they need this place for this kind of thing, the main supporter of the League of Devotees in Jhansi was the owner of a cinema theater. And she is a wife of a politician, so she knows how to pull which string. And she told him, if you want to renew your license, I need this building. So he told Prabhupada, as a matter of fact, that Swamiji, I can't, at that time he was Abhay Babu, I can't help you. So before his very eyes, Prabhupada saw his preaching strategies go as a complete failure. And then a telegram came that his servants had ran off with the last available petty cash even. There was not even some chiller, not even some loose change available. So he was thinking, why Krishna is doing this to me? I'm trying to help Krishna's mission. And then when he had gone back home, he saw that his Bhagavatam is missing. So he asked his wife, did you see my Bhagavat? She said, well, the biscuit wala had come and there was not money available. So I asked him, can you take this book? And in return of that book, I took some tea biscuits. So Prabhupada said, you have to choose now between your husband and tea. Tea or me. Prabhupada called his story the tea or me story. And his wife thought he was in a joking mood. She said, well, okay, then I'll choose tea instead. And that was it. She was not an immoral person. She was not breaking any regulative principles. She was a devotee. But at the same time, she wanted that balance between spiritual life and material life. And Prabhupada was in no mood for that. So that day when he said, I'm leaving, everybody in the household thought, well, Abhay Babu leaves and then again comes back. God knows where he goes, what business he does. But that time he was determined never to turn back. And he said after some time, of course, Prabhupada, all those things which happened to Prabhupada, we should know are part of the internal potency. Prabhupada didn't appear because of his karma. Nothing came to Prabhupada because it was something which was waiting for him to happen. No. It is all an arrangement of Krishna. But still, Prabhupada would explain things in such a way that even neophytes can take lesson. So, Prabhupada thought back, used to reflect back and say, now I know why Krishna took away everything from me so that I could become helpless. And when someone becomes helpless and cries for Krishna's shelter, Krishna is easy to obtain when you have no material support. So then after staying at various godbrothers, mutts, at various temples, finally he decided that I have to be on my own. And then he started the project of preparing himself for the ultimate adventure or the ultimate quest, that is preaching in the West. But he said, I can't go empty-handed. I have to have my literature. So after devoting himself to writing the books, one day, Srila Prabhupada had a very strange dream. One disciple, Revati Nandan Prabhu, in one of the memories video, he was one present that at least on one occasion, Prabhupada explained what exactly happened in that dream. He said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would always have a very grave countenance. He would walk straight. So he said, I saw him looking at me, walking a few steps, and then looking back. He said he did this 2-3 times. And he said, I could be very clear in my heart that what he means is, come. Now when he understood what that come means, to take sannyas, Prabhupada said, I was horror struck. Sannyas? In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati himself would describe sannyas as civil suicide. He said, if a person commits suicide, it's the only crime where you can't put the person in prison because he's not available. If you successfully commit that crime, you are simply not available there. So he would say, similarly, if somebody takes sannyas, he's just not available for any other social function. This person is socially dead. Of course, dead doesn't mean that he just sits in a corner. He is very active for Krishna's service. But he said, at least at that time, that fear came in my heart. That no, sannyas, never. And then after a few days, again the same dream came. Then he decided, at least I will clarify it with some senior god brothers. So he wrote to one established god brother. He had the biggest mutt. And he was thinking that he was the official heir to the Gaudiya Math legacy. So Prabhupada said, I would like to take sannyas. I would like to preach in the West. Could you give me some support? Could you give me some money? He said, first of all, you have to become a member of this math. In short, you have to work under me. And then I have a lot of things to publish. If there is some money available, I will give money for your books. And if there are funds available, we'll think of sending you to the West. So Prabhupada said, these people may not be interested in doing what I want. The need is burning. There is a grave danger of the world just becoming lost without this knowledge. Then he said, I decided to go to one senior god brother, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. He was in charge of the Keshavji Gaudiya Math in Mathura. It's in downtown Mathura. No sooner than Prabhupada explained to him the dream, he just sprang upon Prabhupada and said, Abhay Babu, this means simply you have to take sannyas. That's all. So he said, well, you know, there could be other things also. He said, no. This means our Guru Maharaj wants you to follow him. That's all. So Prabhupada later said, this god brother of mine practically forced me to take sannyas. He said, you can't be a preacher if you don't take sannyas. Of course, what this means is, Lord Chaitanya also took sannyas just because there were a few segments of population who would not respect him as a devotee of Krishna. So at least as a sannyasi, they would offer him obeisances and they would get that benefit. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada took sannyas just so that Indian society could accept him as a natural leader of the society. Of course, that was not to be. Even after taking sannyas, Srila Prabhupada could just have one disciple in India. So after being forced by his godbrother, Srila Prabhupada agreed. And it was on this day, Vishwarupa Mahotsav day, that along with two other candidates for sannyas, Srila Prabhupada accepted the fourth order in Keshavji Gaudiya Math. And a small pastime, that there were few devotees who were told to perform Harinam Kirtan. And when the devotees who were in charge of performing the sacrifice, they would chant their mantras, they would find that this Hare Krishna chanting was becoming a bit too louder. So they would signal them that, slow it. And after some time, Prabhupada would look at them and say, so this devotee was a witness, he remarked that even at that time we could understand that Srila Prabhupada is so attached to spreading the holy name, spreading the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then to everyone's surprise, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj requested Prabhupada to speak. Now normally a candidate sannyasi, he just spends his time under his preceptor, sannyas guru, and he learns. And then afterwards he becomes a preacher. But at that time Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj could understand Srila Prabhupada's stature as a very, very distinguished preacher. And although only few people could learn no English at that time, Srila Prabhupada chose to speak in English and he explained. And there's a very nice picture, Srila Prabhupada looking very grave with his sannyas danda. And that is how we can say, so ISKCON, which is Prabhupada's body, Prabhupada said ISKCON is my body, my very own self. The seeds of a worldwide preaching movement were sown by these series of events when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati finally encouraged Srila Prabhupada to accept the role of a sannyasi. It is not that Srila Prabhupada was a very ambitious person right from the very beginning. He wanted to become the world preacher, or he just wanted to outperform others, or he wanted to just take the seniority himself. In fact, right from the beginning, he tried to associate himself with all those who could support him. Like the other day, there was some discussion about what is the meaning of a guru giving an order. Like sometimes the spiritual master, he, knowing the gravity of a situation, requests a disciple, please do this. This is the only thing I want you to do. One of the most important instructions which Srila Prabhupada followed was of distributing, printing and producing transcendental literature. And the way Srila Prabhupada described it was, he was taking a stroll on the banks of Radhakund. Prabhupada had his son catching his hand, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was discussing some matha matters, saying that now that we have a big building, people are quarreling which room I should get. He said, this marble palace in one sense has spoiled everything. I wish I could take down all those marble tiles and sell them in order to make a person a pure devotee. But even one person becomes, it will be worthwhile. He said, if you get any money, you print books. So it was not like Srila Prabhupada was told that, Abhay Charan, I hereby authorize you that you will become the biggest publisher, distributor and producer of Vedic literature for all the time to come. Srila Prabhupada said, I could understand how much he desired, and therefore I took it seriously. And therefore I request all my followers to take it seriously. So this is how we can understand how great Srila Prabhupada is and how he fulfilled the role of a sannyasi preacher. So I'll have to stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Just a little technical. For many years, we were trying to find out the place where Vishwarupa actually attained samadhi. So we had to give up on that. So I'm wondering how we specify the date.
The question is, I also don't know the answer. The question is, we are certain about the date of Vishwarupa Mahotsav, and Sanat Sanatan Prabhu was for many years the president of ISKCON Pandharpur. So he said they were trying to find out the exact place of his samadhi, but that is not yet ascertained. So how do we know that the date is certain? Anyone has any ideas? Srinathji Prabhu, like to say something on this?
Hare Krishna. I was recently with Loknath Maharaj at Pandharpur, and I asked the same question. And I wanted to see the actual place of samadhi so that we could, you know, offer our worship there. So Loknath Maharaj says that throughout the Shastras, there are certain things like, you know, place is given that so-and-so left his body at so-and-so place, or he merged into Tota Krishna, something like this, and the date was so-and-so. So we go by what Prabhupada said is final, and we have to go by authority. And Prabhupada himself had heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, who in turn had heard from Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who in turn had heard from, you know, so on and so forth, Jagannath Mishra and so on, and or whoever earlier. So finally, this is the answer he gave us when we asked him. So one more comment?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is today his sannyas acceptance day, Vishwarupa's, or is his disappearance day? We just say Vishwarupa Mahotsav.
No, his sannyas thing, we don't know all details.
Okay, this is a disappearance day.
Disappearance day. We don't normally celebrate sannyas.
So what is Vishwarupa Mahotsav? You thought sannyas? Your comment, please.
I had heard from another authority in a Bhagavatam class about gold. You had mentioned about gold to start with. That when Parikshit Maharaj one day went to the storehouse, there he found a huge crown, very heavy crown. Have you heard this story? Of gold. Very heavy crown. But he didn't realize that that crown belonged to Jarasandha, which was conquered at one in the first battle where Krishna had taken that victory. So this crown was kept, but Krishna purposely and so on, Arjun, Yudhishthir, never wore that crown. However, that was not told to Parikshit Maharaj because there was a gap suddenly. So this Parikshit Maharaj just wanted to see whether that crown fitted his head. Just by mere association with the crown of Jarasandha, it was at that moment Parikshit Maharaj felt like going to the forest for hunting. And at that time only he did that snake skin garland to that, you know, right in the beginning of Bhagavatam, where he gets cursed. So the root cause of that curse was the gold. Hare Krishna.
So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Radha Gopinath ki.